Hi, welcome to another of our Coffee Time Chats. Today we're joined by Connor van der Holm of Topline. Topline is a revenue management consultancy Connor established in 2020. And today we talk about the challenges of starting out in revenue management consultancy, facing sales rejection, balancing multiple tasks, and exploring whether you are moving into consultancy to provide income and a job, or actually to build a business. Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hey, Connor, good to see you again. You well?
Doing well. Thanks, Trevor. Glad to be here.
Excellent. Good to have you join us again. And an interesting topic. Not that they aren't all interesting when obviously we get you on here, but this one I think is probably has crossed a number of people's minds over the last 18 months for various reasons. So we're going to look at starting a revenue management consultancy, why you might do it. We might explore reasons why maybe you might change your mind and not do it.
You might. Why you might not.
So I think one of the things I can remember back a number of years ago, I used to work for a franchisor, and I looked after 50 franchisees who would be starting out or were sort of fairly established. And we had to go through an exercise of kind of working out why had they started off in a franchise. Now, obviously, just to set out, you're not a franchise. I'm just using my experience as an example. And what we started to look at how we would, in a way, categorize the sort of people who are running their own business within our franchise operation. And that was anywhere from somebody who had, started out, made the investment, wanting to build a business, to grow, to develop. And then we realized that there were others that actually, what they actually wanted to do was just, they didn't want a business, they just wanted a job. So they, yeah. All they wanted to do was to be self-sufficient, have a bit more freedom, flexibility maybe. And so I think there's various reasons as to why maybe people think about doing it. I think there's probably been a number of reasons as to how people come into that as well. So I think it was just good to get you on here, explore it. You're pretty new to the consultancy game. So probably that's a good starting point to just kick it off and say, okay, just update us. How long have you been in it? And then we'll get into a little bit more about why people might do it, what are some of the misconceptions, and just a general discussion around it. So yeah, tell us about you guys.
So we started about a year and a half ago. We really started at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was really born out of that pandemic and how it really disrupted our industry. I found myself with several of my colleagues jobless. Right.
Simple as that.
And I can tell you the colleagues that I was working with and that we decided to form this company with, phenomenal revenue management professionals. There was no reason other than jobs were redundant. They needed to cut down. And it was the biggest blessing in my life that this happened, because I was at a point in my career, which is what I was really focused on, where I had golden handcuffs.
Right.
I was happy where I was. I was making the money that I needed. I felt good about it. I had just taken 3 weeks prior a new position that was better pay, better situation, better title. And then 3 weeks later, hey, you're the new guy on the block, right? So, and March hit 2020. Brutal. And it was terrible. And my story is not unique at all. But my approach to it was, okay, now I don't have those golden handcuffs stopping me what I wanted to do for years.
Okay, so this was something that you'd been considering for a while. And right. This was almost like the kick that you needed.
It was the kick. It really was. That's exactly how I look at it. It had been talked about, it had been discussed, it had been planned for a long time, but it was going to be the side gig, which then turned into a full-time gig.
Okay.
And I just... And what I found through this is that's a really difficult way to approach it, because you need to be all in.
Yeah.
You really do. And so you just have to accept you're going to be all in, you're going to start from nothing, and then you're going to go a long time until starts to pay off. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's been for us. So
okay. We're going to dig into some of those bits. Maybe a starting point. What do you think of, and I can maybe put some comments in here as well if we need to, having started a couple of business and helped a number of people start their own business as well. What do you think are some of the misconceptions? And we're looking at this from a revenue management consultancy, because I've never worked in a revenue management consultancy. We're not revenue management consultancy. So, you know, it's a very different area, but it's the same principles behind it. What do you think when people are sitting there thinking, oh, I might start my own business? What do you think are some of the misconceptions that are first going through their mind?
Some of them think that because they have good relationships with ownership groups, management groups that they've worked with through a brand or through a management company, that it's going to be easy to get their business. That's simply not the case. People Right. don't want to give up money. They really don't want to give up money to people who they perceive as not being stable yet, because let's face it, you start a consultancy, you're not stable. This is your first time doing it. You have to get your feet under, you have to have a solid service that's defined, and then it's, you know, visible. Everybody wants to see results first, as they should. Totally mm-hmm. understand that. They want to see what your portfolio looks like. They want to see who's already paying you and confident in that before they invest in your company. And so that's a huge hurdle that's difficult to overcome. But it'll take some time. It just will.
What do you think? One of the things I think people, when I used to speak to franchisees when they were coming in, you know, they had this chunk of money that they wanted to invest because they were obviously buying into the franchise at the time. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty realistic. They were experienced individuals. But I always felt there was this sense as if it was almost a get rich quick is the wrong phrase, maybe. But, you know, mm-hmm. I knew how much revenue I'd be generating for my hotel group. If I could be, you know, I knew how much I was earning. If I could be doing that without all the costs and all that money's coming into me, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have to be, maybe have that many hotels, and, you know, my life could be maybe a little bit simpler, and I don't have the mm-hmm. chopping and changing of the management, making different, you know, not, I'm not saying those thoughts went through your mind, but I think sometimes there can be a feeling that life could be a bit simpler yeah. if you're working for yourself, which it can be, but there are complexities as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I had those same thoughts prior, you know, the years building up to it is okay. Well, if I'm just crunching some simple math here, like the costs, if I do a consultancy by myself, let's say I just did it for myself and I wanted it just to be, you know, I've got 10 hotels that I did consultancy with. How much money is that? Oh, it's a ton of money, right? and it's just easy. I'll just sign up 10 hotels, no problem. Yep. But there's so much more to it than that, because not only when you become a consultant and you start your own business, I guess it kind of depends a little bit on whether you want to just be a consultant that works directly with franchisees or however that is, or whether you want to grow it into a company, mm-hmm. right? There's a different mindset there. Yep. If you are just trying to do it yourself, the struggles are going to be finding clients, making sure they feel comfortable with you, make sure you have all the tools and resources in place, that you hold yourself accountable, you have SOPs for yourself.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, there's all this business shell that creates your company. Mm-hmm. You're going to need a way to bill your clients. You're going to need to keep track of all your financials. And if you're not in that finance, like, fortunately, I have an MBA. So like I've spent a lot of time around that.
Sure.
But a lot of folks haven't. Yeah. And so you have to learn what a profit and loss is and how that all works together and for your benefit. Then you have all the costs associated with it. Tools cost money. Even a laptop, you're going to have to get a good laptop to work with. And then there's all these things. You start dabbling into advertising, which is important to get clients, to get some leads. There's just so many different things. And then that's even multiplied further if you're looking to grow this into a company.
Yeah.
Because now you're investing in people. And all of those tools and equipment gets multiplied. And there's so many little things that you just don't expect. I mean, there's little subscriptions. You got to pay for Zoom. You've got to pay for Microsoft Office. Yeah. All those things add up. Your merchant service fees. How are you going to build that into your pricing? There's so many little things that you don't think about. And so instead of just saying, I just want to, you know, I'm just going to get some clients and it's going to be hunky-dory, You have to look at it from, no, I'm actually going to be building something that's completely different. And there's so much more that I'll have to learn.
And I think picking up, you used the word, they're different. And I kind of almost want to go back a little bit because you've touched on so many elements there that we'll kind of pick up during this conversation. But I guess the starting point is let's say you've sat down, you've spoken to some people, they've outlined to you, you know, take your rose tinted glasses off. This is going to be hard work. But yeah. You think, okay, fine. I'm up for the challenge. Like you, you know, it's maybe been in the back of the mind and this has just been the push that was needed. So we made the decision. We're going to start the business. Mm-hmm. I guess you've got to understand what you are actually going to take to market. I mean, just your service offering first and foremost and establishing a USP. I mean, how challenging is that? Because revenue management is revenue management, isn't it?
Right. But when you're pitching this idea to folks, these clients that you already have, right, or they have a connection to
the relationship,
you definitely need to. It all starts with the foundation, right? So you're going to need to first have a clearly defined service offering, mm-hmm. right? Understand exactly what you're bringing to the table, and then just as importantly, what you're not doing, mm-hmm. because you can go off in a lot of different directions. Believe me, we've gone in a few different directions.
That's a really good point.
Backtrack.
Yeah.
Right. So just clearly define. Do something that you know you can do very well and that you can deliver on. Outline that and then start working on pricing, because and that's something that's going to be fluid. Just giving an example for us. When we started, and we're revenue managers, so we understand the difference between base business and premiums, right? as we're trying to establish our clientele, our pricing structure is significantly different than it is today, right?
Yeah.
We're reaching out to folks. It's almost a, hey, I'm going to be giving away a lot of service here for free. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you at a really solid, it's going to be a benefit for you because you're going to be an early entrant. We're going to devote a lot of time and attention to you as we're building our service, and you're going to get a great price, right? But we're going to treat it as if you're getting a premium, you're paying a premium.
Yeah.
And so start out there. As you build your clientele, your pricing is going to be, and you're going to be giving a lot of stuff away. You just are. And that's fine. It'll pay out. And then as you become more established, you can start shifting it more towards, if you have a premium service, then start shifting it that way as you have more clients and more leads coming in. But that's the first start. And then after you have your service and your pricing established, then you start looking at your target audience, right? Your target market. Who exactly are you going after? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of people in this industry and a lot of them are not decision makers and a lot of them don't jive with you. And a lot of them have different goals and have different requirements. And so they can't work with you, or they wouldn't work with you because they have the service already in-house. And so then you start to navigate that and you start asking questions and you ask a lot of people and you start just having conversations and finding out, okay, who are the decision makers that would use my service? And how do I connect with them in a meaningful way that's not just sales pitchy, and then start having those conversations.
And I guess in a way, it's there was a phrase that was, I don't know if you used over there, I guess it probably would be when you're out looking for investment. You know, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs, really, haven't you, at the start to find those that are going to convert. Because, you know, when you're making that first contact, you don't know what arrangement they have. You don't know what attitude they have to using consultancy. You may know a little bit of their setup, but anyone that starts out goes with a lot of confidence that what they are going to be on offering. Because I guess fundamentally, when you're starting out, back to your point earlier where you have no track record, you're really offering yourself. So, you know, it's your track record, your CV, your credibility, because you don't have anything more than that at the beginning. So you're looking to find people that are going to buy into you more than anything else. But until you start those conversations, you don't know what circumstances you're going to come up against, are you?
And even though you have the dream of being the boss who's just, you know, moving puzzle pieces around, just understand you're going to be the one button pushing for a long, long time. Right. So just be good with that and be comfortable with it. Some people aren't, and this isn't for them. It just isn't, because you can't just, back to your original example of franchisors or franchisees, as we call them. So they got this chunk of money and they want to invest it because they expect there going to be a return, mm-hmm. but they're not always cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of, they're going to be doing the work.
Yeah.
And it's not just handing over money. You're handing over money and a huge portion of your life at the same time.
It's funny you say that. I can remember having conversations when, you know, because obviously the franchisor I worked for, they would have the sales team and then they would come across to us, because our role was on the commercial side, actually making the business work, helping them to work through their their sales strategy, helping them develop what is their, how are they going to make the offering that they're buying into slightly more unique and a reflection of them. And I can always remember saying to somebody that at the end of the day, what you've done is, using a car analogy, you've kind of bought the shell of the car and the color, but you know, you're going to kind of spray it and kind of pimp it up a little bit in your own way. But don't forget, the car doesn't run unless you put the engine in it, and you are the engine. And it was like, sometimes they kind of expected that because they were buying into a franchise, the engine was going to already be there. And I think that comes back to your point, when you're starting out, whether going it alone, whether as a franchise or whatever structure it may be, the moment you step out on your own, you're the engine. If the engine isn't running, it ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. And if you're going to be having partners, just realize, and I've stepped in this myself in different endeavors, but just realize that you need to have, if you're going to have multiple people, they all need to be pulling in the same direction.
Yeah,
and they all need to be pulling, because if they're not pulling and they're just expecting a cut, it can be really problematic. That's really with anything, but especially with partners.
Yeah.
Just understand that.
And you mean starting a business with partners.
With partners.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That was one. Yeah. I would just caution anybody, just know, even if you know somebody on a personal level, you don't know what their work ethic is necessarily and how that's going to translate. You know the factors in their life.
Yeah.
Right? There's really solid reasons. I mean, I'll tell you, just on a personal level, it's a really difficult endeavor when you've got a spouse, you've got kids, because the financial impact on it. And, you know, just basically saying, hey, I'm going to be jumping into this thing without anything, any return for a long time. Mm. And I'm going to be devoting more time than I was working in my previous gig. And it's not going to seem like it's paying off for a long time.
Yeah, I'm committing more time to the same thing I was doing before, but there's less money going to be coming in.
And your spouse gets ticked off because you keep saying, you know, the name of your company. And she's like, yeah, but it's not really anything yet because there's no money coming in the door. And you gotta say, look, it's going to happen. And then if you just keep, and you can't let off the gas either. You're the engine. You got to keep going and going and going and going. And that is difficult. A lot of days, you know, First thing in the morning, it's hard, but you can't let off.
No, you're full on. And I think one of the other things as well, and you kind of alluded to it when we were talking about some of the misconceptions when you're going in and thinking, oh, you know, from your perspective, every hotel, you know, they need revenue management. They may have a team, but it's like every hotel is going to need this service, going to need this solution. But there are some barriers to that from GMs or from ownership or whatever it may be. But there's also another barrier that, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. It's that balancing between because when you're starting out, you're actually delivering the consultancy as well. So you're winning the business. And until you have any business, that's all you're doing is selling. Then you get the business starts to come in. So now you're working in the business. And then you've still got to try and sell. Yeah. And so balancing that is an interesting challenge.
It is, man. You got to be very, you got to be very detail oriented first off. And you got to have a really good system for keeping everything in track, because you can't be letting stuff slip through. You can't. And it does. It's just really built and built and built, because to your point, you start with sales, then your sales and doing the service, and then your sales service, you bring somebody else on and you're now your boss. And so you're checking their work and making sure that's appropriate and paying them appropriately and making sure that all that stuff is lined up, because you have to be a good boss. And so it just builds and builds and builds. And until you cross a threshold that I have yet to cross, where you don't have to do the service anymore, right? Where you actually can be completely.
There's enough people just to be the boss and the strategic and probably exactly. Selling in a way, isn't it? You're always the front guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Until you get to that point, I don't know where that point's at. I know at some point down the road, because we're building a company, not just a job. It will happen. But at this time, it's just built and built and built, and it's just stacking up on top. And you can't let any of it slip.
Yeah.
You can't let any of it slip. And so I just be prepared for that as best as you can. I would say it's coming, you know, it's going to be there.
And when you went out, started selling, what were some of the things that surprised that maybe surprised you when you were first engaging with potential clients that you didn't anticipate?
Yeah, I'd say one, you can really tell who is forward thinking. There's listening to Simon Sinek the other day, and he was talking about how there's the early adopters, and then there's the bulk of everyone, and then the latecomers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're really looking for those early adopters who are saying, okay, there's a huge benefit to me being an early entrant. And you're not looking for the bulk of people. You're really looking for a very specific client,
yeah,
who says, heck yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. I know there's a huge benefit for me. It's going to be a good payout because I'm going to pay you less and you're going to give me more service.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let's give it a shot.
That classic bell curve, isn't it? You're missing that big chunk in the middle. You're just looking.
Right. And yeah. So you need to get your dominoes start to roll in here, and you need to do it by finding the early entrants, people who are keen on that, very forward thinking. And man, those people are so fun. I'll tell you, like our
they're the ones clients, you want to work with, aren't they?
They're so great. They're so great because they recognize that you're just a person and you're building this thing, and they want to help you. And so they're incredibly supportive, and they're understanding, and they just want to help you build it into something great, knowing that it's going to be good for them too. So that's who you're looking for. You're not looking for the bulk. And so that was surprising to me, because we start looking and casting a wide net. And
yeah. Well, that would be the natural thing to do, wouldn't it?
Right. Exactly. And you'll just find, and kind of going back to your original question, you'll find there's a lot of barriers to entry, which come in the form of people. And it's kind of this bottom up to the decision makers. There's a lot of filters and a lot of gatekeepers mm-hmm. in between you and the decision maker, between you and yes. And so one of the things we initially started doing, man, we hit the ground hard, and we started going to hotels, talking to general managers or sales manager, whoever we could get in front of, and asking them about their revenue management, and talking to them about, who they use currently and what that might look like, who the management company is. And while they would tell you who their decision maker was, there was no way they're letting you talk to their decision maker, because they don't know how poorly you're going to reflect on them, and they're not going to pass you up to your boss. Why would they? Even mm-hmm. if they like what you're selling, like, they don't want to take that risk.
Yeah, good point.
Because you could be a giant flop, and the company could lose money, and then it's on them. You don't want to refer somebody you don't know. And so that's an approach. I would say this is one of the key things, and we're kind of halfway into this conversation, but there's a key thing I could tell somebody starting a consultancy is bypass the gatekeepers, go straight to the decision makers. Because and it's the same way if you're trying to get a job, okay? If you go through HR, HR's job is to filter you out mm-hmm. because they need to put the best clients, the best candidates on the desk of the boss. But if you supersede them and you go straight to the boss, and the boss likes you, the boss tells the HR, give this person a job. Mm-hmm. Puts it on their desk. Fine. They're good. They're happy with it.
Well, as you say, they're not putting their name to it, are they? Whereas
they're not putting their name
when
to
they're pushing
it,
the CVs no, up, their name's connected yeah. to that's our recommendation. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So just recognize, go straight to the top, go straight to the decision maker, find that connection, have those discussions.
I mean, it's good advice. That can then increase the length of the sales cycle a little bit, though, isn't it? Because those people naturally have got used to having these gatekeepers to do that filtering. They also require the filtering. So getting through to speak to them can also be quite challenging. You got to be pretty resilient and pretty dogged in your approach, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and a lot of it comes down to timing too, because even though they're the right decision maker, the timing could be completely wrong. I've had a ton of conversations, which is like, hey, we'd actually be really interested in your service, but not right now because I've got so many staffing issues that I can't even take the time to discuss it.
Yeah.
And then other ones where you just kind of pitch it out there and say, hey, let me ask you a couple questions about revenue. They're like, actually, this is perfect timing because we're midstream in budgets and we need to have this discussion and we're not comfortable where we're at currently. So the timing thing. And so you got to get a lot of touch points and get in front of a lot of people.
And that comes back to your point about being organized, because a lot of those ones that the timing's not right, you got to have a system where you're following up, you get your reminders, you keep track of it, you keep that relationship going. And I think there's often a feeling of when people get a no, particularly when you're starting out, you can take it quite personally because you think they're saying no to you. And they're not, because they don't necessarily know you. They're saying no to the service you're offering, but it can feel quite personal. And also understanding that you're probably going to get a number of no's along the way, and you've got to be ready for that process, because that can be, I think that can be quite hard. And you can find different people coming at whatever business they're starting up. But I mean, if you're coming into a revenue management consultancy, one of the challenges that is often laid down, or one of the critiques that is sometimes leveled at revenue management professionals, is that they need to up their game around communication and to be more commercial and to think more strategically. And yeah. by nature, they may not be sales people and yeah. the strongest communicators. And so in times, they can feel like they're almost on a back foot before they've even got started, because you've got yeah. to go out and be that, and be that salesperson, which doesn't always come naturally, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if you have a background in sales, you're going to be already positioned better for this, because you just, you, in knocking doors, you just got to get used to the fact that you're going to get them slammed in your face. Yeah. Right? It just happens. Yeah. And if you've got that background, then you kind of know what to expect. You're going to get, it's always a no. Yeah. It's always a no. And you're surprised when it's a yes. That's just how it is. And it's personal, because going back to our previous point, you're selling yourself. You're selling your own ability and skill set, and so it is personal. And if you're faint of heart, this is not for you. You really need to suck it up and get to it, and not take it personally. Just know that there's another person to talk to, and that there's maybe another time to circle back with this person. So
yeah, it's kind of got to be personal enough that you're passionate about it and what you're selling, but then you've got to distance yourself from it being personal if someone says no. And that's a challenging dichotomy sometimes.
I've certainly had people who I have worked with before and did an excellent job and had a great rapport with, and I've still gotten no's from them. And it's because the situation, or you know, they weren't the decision maker or whatever it was, is not appropriate for them. Totally fine. But you cannot take that personally. I didn't, and because I didn't take it personally, like, you know, we're growing really well.
Yeah, you're just able to move forward. Well, that word growing kind of takes me on to the next phase, because if you've decided, okay, I'm not just building a job here, I'm not just trying to find enough clients to keep ticking over with an income that I'm comfortable with, and you actually want to build a business and you're going to continue to grow, what are the challenges and maybe some of the things that you've looked at having to do or realized that you needed to do to help either with the growth of the offering or with the growth of the business? What are some of your insights on that part?
Yeah, you need to make sure that you're getting, you have a constant flow of communication and feedback from your current existing clients, those early adopters, and they're going to tell you things that you're doing wrong, because you are doing things wrong.
Yeah.
And so get that and then adjust to it, right? That's the first thing I would say. Next thing is, I'm very much in the fray right now with this part, is at what point do you bring people on to do that work because you can't handle it yourself, or it's not in the best interest of your clients to handle it yourself while you're growing things.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I have the perfect answer to that one, because again, I'm navigating that right now.
Don't think anyone
but knows. I will tell you in recent things, it's, you need to make sure you actually have enough work to give somebody, not just that you can afford them. Right. Yeah. You can afford to pay them.
Yeah.
Because if you can afford to pay them, that's very, very important. And you need to be solid in that, because you can't be making commitments to people if you can't follow through on the long term.
That's not fair.
Right. And that's not fair. And then the second part is, okay, now you can afford to bring somebody on. And now you're thinking, okay, it'd be great to get some of this workload off of me and give it to somebody who's qualified and skilled in it. But maybe I don't have a full workload for them.
Yeah. So yeah, I gotta pay a full salary.
Exactly.
But they may only have enough work for 50-60% of the time.
You know, if we got half the portfolio or three quarters of the portfolio for them, then I still need to hold off. Like, I still need to make sure that they have something to do on a daily basis and they're adding value and that it's working well.
Absolutely.
So just take a look at those two things and don't be too eager to bring somebody on just because you want to, you know, transition a little bit of the workload.
Yeah, you probably got to spread a bit more of that. The little time that you had outside of work, you've now got to take a bit of that and put some more into work, because you've just got to burn the candle at both ends for a while until you get enough coming through. But then that draws me to another point, because, you know, you said you've got a family, you've just had Thanksgiving, Now, thankfully, everyone switches off around that time. But I mean, you know, without going into all the detail, I know because we speak pretty regularly. You know, you had a health issue recently, and you weren't too well. I'm sitting here with a stinking cold. If you want to have a holiday, I mean, all of that just is like, well, forget that. You just got to get back at the desk somehow.
Right. No, that's exactly right. It's really messy, and you're always on, yeah. Right? There's no off switch. And to your point, back in the summertime, I had a surgery, right? And I'm the next day, like I still needed to support my hotels. And so I'm sitting there from this hospital bed, just furiously emailing, taking phone calls. They're like, you need to be resting. I was like, I can't, I'm a business owner. I got hotels that need support. And so, you know, that's all going on. And I hadn't taken a day off until this Thanksgiving. I hadn't taken a day off since we started the company, not even a single stinking day. Okay. You know, you might get a little time on the weekend with some family, but, you just can't. And that is a grind of itself. And it's a mental challenge, that you just need to be. Fortunately, I've done quite a few things in my life that have been like that. And so I was more prepared for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how somebody who hasn't will deal with that. I don't know how they'll fare with it, but just be prepared. Like you're always on. And if you have difficulties with separating work and family, this is going to be exacerbated. So just be prepared and have that conversation with whoever is in your life that you need to have that conversation with.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Continually. It's super messy. The whole thing is super messy. And even above that, you're going to be uncomfortable all the time. There's no comfort. There's no comfort in growth. There just isn't.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's topics that come across my desk that I have to address and I have to make a decision on. And I have no education in that and I have no experience with it, but I'm the guy. I'm the shot caller on it. And so in those situations, the best thing you can do is get as much information as you can, put in the diligent study, figure it out and come up with the best solution you think, and then ask a lot of questions of people who know.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, how do you build those networks? And I guess partnerships are things that you look at doing as well. What have you learned on this journey about working with people in partnership relationships, which probably wasn't something that you would have experienced much of before?
No, you need to build partnerships. That is crucial, not just from a networking standpoint, but just so you have a solid foundation and you can refer people. And when you get questions from new clients and they ask you about something that's not in your wheelhouse, you can refer them to the right place and say, hey, we have an established partnership. These people will take great care of you. We know they will because they do work, do good work. Mm-hmm. And just build out that base. So anybody who, you know, companies that have good reputations within the same industry, let's say, but work in parallel or tertiary, you know, service offerings, mm-hmm. that are close to yours, but aren't in direct competition. Those are really crucial.
So it could be like your experience in revenue management, but as revenue management and marketing come closer, you'd have a partnership within, say, digital marketing or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right. So just perfect. You know, Stephanie Smith and her team over at Cogwell, we mm-hmm. have a strong partnership with them. We share a lot of the same things, but we're not in direct competition with one another. And so we can refer and we can ask those questions because, you know, I've asked so many questions of Stephanie. I'll just shoot her an email or give her a call and say, hey, tell me about this because I don't know. And the client's asking me.
Yeah.
And so from that, it's building out that base. It's building out that ground game. I've had way more conversations with potential partners and current partners than I've ever had with clients.
Really?
Especially starting out. You just start understanding that all these conversations and time takers of my day are not going to produce money. They're going to produce a partnership, which is foundational and key.
I think that is a really interesting point because I think it's very easy to think, well, unless... taking your instance, a revenue management consultancy. Unless I'm doing revenue management consultancy with a hotel that is paying me money for that, I'm mm-hmm. not working. But at the beginning, a lot of time you are working really hard, but you are not generating any revenue. So it feels at time as if you are not working, you're wasting time, but you're not. You're actually really establishing those stronger foundations, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Yep, absolutely right. You're doing so much. You're turning those wheels so hard, but you're getting no traction in the revenue department, right? Yeah. And so, you know, you're getting tons of traction. You're getting tons of partnerships. You're forming all this stuff. You're all kind of ganging together and forming your crew, right? As the kids would say. And you're forming that, you're establishing it, but you're just not having any money coming in the door. So what am I doing? Am I just playing house here? Or I'm actually, you know, actually, is this a real thing? And then the other thing I'd say too to that is you're going to be, that imposter syndrome is big time. You're going to feel like an imposter. You start presenting yourself. You've been in a different position with a company as an employee, and now you're the head of a company, right?
Yeah.
Completely different. The people you talk with are completely different. Like, you know, I talk with some of my hotel teams and they can't believe I'm talking with the COO on a casual basis or making, you know, poking fun at him or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but we're kind of on that same plane. Like I'm directing as a business owner and he's leading this company too. So you associate with different people and it takes a while to get used to that. Mm. And present yourself and feel confident in that. And it's difficult, man.
Because historically you'd always look up to these people, wouldn't it? Yeah. And right. I mean, looking up in a organization structure, if not necessarily looking up out of respect, but they were always above you. They were always the one telling your boss what to be telling you. Yeah. And now you're talking to them and you got to talk to them on an even playing field.
That's right. No, exactly. You don't have those barriers. You don't have those people in between you and them and a hierarchy in between you
skipping
and them.
Skipping the gatekeepers, going straight to the man. The
That's right. So feel confident. You know, feel confident in that. You have to. If you don't have confidence, it's going to be very difficult for you.
Well, that's where you hear so many people. And I hate the phrase fake it to make it, because I think you got to have something. You can't fake everything.
You got to have some substance.
You got to have something there. But I think kind of faking your own mindset a little bit to just get over some of those hurdles is what they're really driving at there, aren't they?
You need to convince yourself that you are actually the person that you're presenting. There's a lot of that.
And that you're worthy of being in that room, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And you probably are.
Yeah.
You probably are. You just have, you know, you took a different path before, which is a slower ladder of steps through a career and going through gatekeepers. And now you've just, you've removed yourself and transplanted yourself right at the top of something. And now you need to, you know, to fill in your boots. Right. And I think the term that I like to use is bullfrogging, because there's a level of puffing out and saying, hey, so here I am. But for this situation, I need to make it look like, hey, I'm confident. I'm presenting myself the appropriate way. And I'm talking more about vision and where the company's going and less so much the actual pool of revenue that I have coming in. There's a lot of that as you get started for the first year and a half, you know? So bullfrogging.
That makes sense. Okay. I'm conscious of your time, because this is not revenue management or building your business. So I'm going to kind of one final question, just almost summarizing what we've also discussed. So you work really hard. You have to put a lot of long hours in. You get no revenue coming in. You're the engine that drives the car. There's people pulling at you in lots of different directions. You get a huge amount of rejection. You got imposter syndrome, but yet you still do it. What's that all about?
Man, I've had this incredible, it's been an incredible journey to this point. Man, I'm so thrilled that I'm doing it. I really am. I'm just so passionate about it. I'm so excited about it. And to be where we're at now, it's humbling. And my mentality has switched around about, it's gone from paycheck driven to wealth driven. Mm-hmm. And more of a, we're building something that's not necessarily translated to just a bank account, right? And one thing that I would say, just kind of being, just deep in dive into the psyche of Connor Vanderholm here, in case you really wanted to do that. One of the things I've grown most is my mentality around what my time is worth. Mm-hmm. Okay. I used to have a dollar figure or a salary figure, annual figure, what my time was worth and what I'd be happy with. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then as I've transitioned into being in Boston, having conversations of paying people, right? Oftentimes, and we pay our folks really competitively. We try to pay them very well and make sure they're very comfortable with it. But looking at it from an owner, what my time is worth per hour, or what, you know, this, what I think is a good deal, has completely changed. And I often want to look at some people that we employ or that I've had conversations with and say, do you not see what your time is actually worth? You know, I'm paying you more than a, go on. Because it's no longer a dollar figure. So as I was first starting to have this conversation, I was doing dinner with a friend of mine as I was doing a sales trip. And we went into a really nice restaurant. And on our way out, I spoke to the two kids at the front desk. One was 20-something, the other was like 16. I said, can I ask you a question? What is your time worth? You know, if you could, doesn't matter what job you're doing, you're happy with it. What is it worth per hour? And the one kid said that his, you know, he's 16 years old. He'd be happy with $14 an hour. Like he'd just be ecstatic. And the gal next to him was 20, 21, 22. And she said her time was worth $20 an hour because she's older. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, look, if you got the skill set and you've got the ability to deliver, those numbers do not add up. Like that is just, it's your time is worth so much more than that. I just want people to understand that your time is worth so much. And as an entrepreneur, you can make your life reflective of what your value is. Mm-hmm. And so I just want people to understand that the mentality of being an employee is so much different than being a boss.
Yeah.
It's just super different. And just be conscious of that. If you go on this journey, your mentality is going to change. And then, you know, obviously treat people fairly and keep with you the fact that you know that even though they think their time is worth something, you put a premium on their time and you pay them more.
Yeah.
You pay them more than what they think that they deserve because you know their time is worth more.
Yeah. That's very, very good point. Very good point. I don't think we get caught into that trap around salary and hierarchy and structure, don't we? And we don't even consider worth sometimes.
Right.
That's a good finishing point. Well, look, having known you almost from the early time of when you were starting off, having watched how you're growing your business, we always enjoy having our conversations. But I think this one was particularly interesting to just hear a little bit more about some of those challenges. But I think it's very obvious to see that despite all of that, not only have you continued to grow, but you thoroughly enjoy what you do and thoroughly enjoy the support that you're able to provide to your hotels and the value you bring to them. So I think that's the main driving factor. I think that's pretty much it from our side. Nothing, any final comments from your point of view?
No, I just appreciate the conversation because it's not one I get to have that often, to be honest with you. I'm often in the work and don't get to sit back and reflect on it a little bit. So I think this is a perfect year to start reflecting. And so,
yeah, I think it's a good point. And a final thing, I don't want to put another task for you to do in amongst the many that you have, but if anyone is sitting here listening to this or is contemplating or even thinking of maybe stepping outside and has bought into your worth and value and sees you as being someone they could maybe engage with or potentially work with, if they reach out to you, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, they can find you on LinkedIn and we can make sure that you've got the contact details in there. Are you happy with that?
I love doing that. I try to get involved as much as I can with students as well at my alma mater. And I'm thrilled to share. I'm thrilled to share as much as I can. So please do. If we've never talked before, we have a completely different path. If you want to just discuss, reach out to me. Absolutely. You can find us on our website. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Brilliant. So. Super. Well, as ever, thanks again for your time. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Trevor.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, I hope that conversation was of interest. And thanks again to Connor for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. We value your input and we're happy to follow up with our guests. Also, if there are any topics that particularly interest you, or if there are any specific guests you would like to hear from, please do let us know. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. That's insights@revenue-hub.com. And if you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel. and the link is in the podcast notes. And if you do watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you would consider subscribing. It really helps out the channel, which helps us to help others. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.